It is Thursday, April 6th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, the controversial chairman of the House Intelligence Committee steps down from the Russia hacking investigation.
This was all coming after weeks of, you know, unrest and chaos and questions among the House Intelligence Committee members.
Syria's foreign minister denies the government used chemical weapons against a town in northern Syria, and we hear about the winners and losers at the Academy of Country Music Awards. It's all ahead. The chairman of the House Intelligence Committee, Devin Nunes, says he's temporarily stepping down from the panel's investigation into alleged Russian hacking during the 2016 election campaign. Nunes made the decision after ethical complaints were lodged against him. I spoke with VOA congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson and asked her if this move by Nunes came as a surprise.
Well, it certainly came as a bit of a surprise to some of the members of the House Intelligence Committee who had a meeting early this morning, just before the House is due to go on a two-week spring recess. And ranking Democratic member Adam Schiff said that he didn't know about this news until he received the press release from Nunes's office. So certainly a bit of a surprise here on Capitol Hill today. But, you know, this was all coming after weeks of, you know, unrest and chaos and questions among the House Intelligence Committee members as they questioned what exactly the chair had been thinking when he went to the White House to brief the president after viewing those classified documents. So I think this is a very strategic move on the part of the House Intel chair. He can let some of this discussion die down over the recess, and hopefully the investigation can move forward.
And Nunes said several left-wing activist groups had filed accusations of impropriety against him. Is it known who these groups are?
We don't know that yet, but we do know that the House Ethics Committee has opened an investigation into Nunes, and that's based on his statements when he came out to the press and said that he had looked at these documents and seen these names. So there's some question about whether he revealed classified information in that press briefing. So the House Ethics Committee will take a look at that issue, and whether or not the left-wing activist groups triggered that, that investigation will go on. And clearly Nunes is a bit concerned about that.
Now, Representative Mike Conaway is now going to be taking charge of the investigation. He probably is in a bit of a difficult spot himself, just, you know, following up Nunes in this particular situation.
That's right. You know, obviously he steps into a bit of an awkward situation after a couple of weeks where Democratic and Republican members of the House Intelligence Committee have been at odds with each other over this Nunes question. And you may remember that Conaway had an interesting exchange with FBI Director James Comey during that first and so far only public hearing into the Russia investigation. He asked Comey if, you know, he felt that Russia and Putin were on the side of Donald Trump. And Comey said, well, by, you know, definition, they didn't want Hillary Clinton to win. So in other words, they wanted Trump to win. And Conaway seemed to kind of struggle with that idea and wonder if really that showed that the Russians had support for Donald Trump. So it'll be interesting to see how he moves forward in this, you know, extremely unusual situation and believing what he does about what happened in terms of Russia's election meddling.
Certainly interesting times are ahead.
That's for sure.
Thanks a lot, Catherine.
You're so welcome.
That's VOA congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson. Well, joining me here in the studio is social media editor Andrew Pelshevsky. So, Andrew, what's going on?
Well, more high drama on Capitol Hill on a different issue, and this is on the Senate side, involving the nuclear option. Now, the nuclear option doesn't have anything to do with nuclear weapons or nuclear war. We'll clear that up right away. It is a change to the Senate procedure and precedent that allows confirmations on a simple majority vote, and this is surrounding Supreme Court nominee Neil Gorsuch. Previously, you needed to get 3/5 majority, 60 votes out of the 100 in the Senate to confirm a Supreme Court nominee. Well, the Republicans in the Senate have voted to change that to do it as a simple majority. So, seen as a victory for Republicans, many of them praising this, saying that they need to confirm Gorsuch, get him on the Supreme Court. Many Democrats very angry that this procedure was changed to allow for Supreme Court nominees to be confirmed by a simple majority, and a lot of them evoking the name Merrick Garland, who was, of course, President Obama's nominee to fill the court, never got a vote in the Senate. It was said that because it was an election year, they were going to push that off. A lot of people very unhappy that Merrick Garland did not get a vote and that this nomination is being pushed through and changes to the rules. So, as we said, lots of high drama, lots of back and forth, partisan back and forth up on Capitol Hill. But just a few miles from Capitol Hill and a few miles from our headquarters here at the Voice of America, moving ceremony today at Arlington National Cemetery, where the astronaut and former Senator John Glenn is being laid to rest. The U.S. Marines actually have a live video of the rainy ceremony there at Arlington. It's gotten over 1 million views on Facebook as people are tuning in to watch that entire ceremony. And a lot of people sharing the clips of the moments that where Annie Glenn, John Glenn's widow, is handed the flag as part of the military honors. They fold the flag that's draped over the casket and give it to the spouse or the family of the person that has died. So a lot of people sharing that very moving moment. Interesting to note that today would have been their 74th wedding anniversary. So some timing there, certainly. And the phrase we're seeing over and over again on social media, Godspeed, John Glenn.
Yes. Oh, so much. All right. Thanks a lot, Andrew. That's social media editor Andrew Pelshevsky. Here are some of the top news stories trending. President Trump and Chinese President Xi Jinping are headed to a summit at the U.S. leader's Florida estate. Senate Republicans fail to halt a blockade of President Trump's Supreme Court nominee. Gambians are voting in parliamentary elections, and the Center for Disease Control says 25% of men are infected with cancer-causing HPV. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the VOAnews.com website. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
Radio telescopes from Chile to Europe to the United States and even the South Pole are linking together for 10 days to form one giant Earth observatory for a project called the Event Horizon Telescope. Scientists are using this global telescope network to image the event horizon or point of no return of the supermassive black hole located at the heart of our Milky Way galaxy. This massive black hole is 26,000 light-years away and is said to have a mass 4 million times that of our own sun. Event Horizon Telescope scientists will also study the process of how black holes gather matter and grow in size, as well as look for a shadow that circles them. According to project scientists, this shadow is direct evidence for a black hole, as predicted by Einstein's theory of general relativity. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, an in-depth look at the Academy of Country Music Awards. Syria's Foreign Minister Walid Mollem says the government was not responsible for the alleged chemical weapons attack in the northern Idlib town of Khan Sheikhoun. Edward Uranian reports for VOA from Cairo.
Walid Mollem refuted allegations his government dropped chemical bombs against Khan Sheikhoun, now under the control of the Jabhat al-Nusra group, earlier this week. During a news conference Thursday in Damascus, he said the accusations were faulty. Walem says that the first allegations of a chemical weapons attack took place more than 5 hours before the Syrian Air Force attacked the Jabhat al-Nusra-held town. He says Syrian warplanes bombed an arms depot under Jabhat al-Nusra's control that may have contained such weapons. Mualim maintained his government has not and will not use chemical weapons against its own people, adding it has no interest in using poison gas in any case. He asks if it is logical the government would use chemical weapons at a time when it is starting to win on the ground and beginning to convince others of the merits of its cause. The veteran Syrian foreign minister says he understands the implications of U.S. President Donald Trump's warning to Syria about taking unilateral action, but pointed out that permanent United Nations Security Council members are bound to uphold the UN Charter and not take unilateral action. Mualim also says U.S.-led coalition forces have struck civilian targets in the town of Mansoura near Deir Zor and in Raqqa. If the United States wants to apply humanitarian criteria in the Khan Shaykhun case, he said sarcastically, then let them start by applying it to themselves. The U.S.-led coalition apologized for what it said was an accidental attack on Syrian government positions near Deir Zor late last year. Mualim went on to allege that a notorious case of chemical weapons usage in 2013 against the eastern suburbs of Damascus was perpetrated by Qatar and Turkey. The Syrian government supposedly gave up most of its chemical weapons stockpile following the incident. Western governments accused Damascus of that attack. The Syrian foreign minister told another journalist that his government was willing to accept an international investigation of the Khan Shaykhun attack, provided that it is not politicized, that it includes a wide array of different parties, and is not based outside of Syria, especially in Turkey, whose hostility towards Syria, he alleged, knows no boundaries. Edward Uranian for VOA News, Cairo.
Well, closer to home here in Washington, D.C., the New York Post has reported that more people are leaving the greater New York City region than any other major U.S. metropolitan area. The area includes a four-state region, parts of New Jersey, Northeast Pennsylvania, Connecticut, the lower Hudson Valley, and Long Island, both in New York, that's home to 20 million people. However, E.J. McMahon, research director for the Empire Center for Public Policy, tells International Edition's Victor Beatty that outflow did not drastically reduce the New York area's population, which has been helped by a steady inflow of foreign-born migrants, as well as a fairly high birth rate.
Between 2010 and 2016, the latest figures that are out, New York City, consolidated metropolitan area, lost 1 million people to what's known as domestic migration. That is, people who lived in the area 1 year and had moved out by the following year. That basically was the biggest population loss among major metropolitan areas. That added up to a domestic migration rate of -4.4%. The only area that was close was the Chicago metro area, which actually takes in a three-state slice of Indiana and Wisconsin also. And the Chicago area lost 4.3% of its 2010 population to migration. And then down the list from there is an area that wouldn't surprise you, Detroit, followed by the Cleveland metro area, followed by Philadelphia, followed by St. Louis, and then Los Angeles. That's not a population loss, though, because the area also took in immigrants. The New York metropolitan area, while it lost 1 million people more to other states than moved in from other states during the 6 years, it also took in 945,000 foreign immigrants, international migrants. This has been a continuing story for a while, both for New York in particular and for the other states in the Northeast.
Can we say this is part of this long trend of so-called white flight from these areas?
No, not entirely, no. We don't have racial or ethnic breakdowns of the people moving, but actually some segment of the people moving out of the New York City region were themselves immigrants from overseas a few years earlier. Remember, there's a common flow. New York City and the New York region in particular have been a portal for immigrants for 150 or more years. They don't all stay in the New York region. We know from general studies of migration that one of the major reasons people move is for economic opportunity. When the economy is better, in general, the better the economy is, the more movement and migration there is around the country and the more out-migration loss from areas like New York.
E.J. McMahon, research director for the Empire Center for Public Policy. This is VOA.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you news as it happens. Listen to Africa News Tonight, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our five-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Hi, this is Larry London, the host of VOA's Border Crossing. I feature music and interviews with your favorite artists from all around the world. And you can not only listen, but you can interact live with us here in Washington, D.C. Border Crossings comes to you Monday through Friday at 1500 UTC GMT on VOA.
Some of the best moments, surprises, and big winners. What happened at the Academy of Country Music Awards? Nikki Strong of VOA Music fills us in. Nikki, let's start with some of the best moments.
Okay, well, there were many. I'll give you about three. One was the unexpected tribute to Chuck Berry at the beginning of the show with Luke Bryan, Dierks Bentley, and the great guitarist Joe Walsh, who many know from the Eagles, and who's been known to, like, mimic Chuck Berry as well. So that was great. Miranda Lambert's captivating, emotional, just chill-inducing performance, her emotional performance of a new song off of her album Weight of These Wings, Tin Man, which pretty much warns the Tin Man of the Wizard of Oz of the challenges of having a heart. But if he still wants one, he can have hers, and it's broken. So, like, the song itself will make you cry, let alone her performance of it. It resulted in a standing ovation. Yes.
Very impressive.
Yes. Another huge moment was when the Backstreet Boys took the stage with Florida Georgia Line. So they have a song together called God, Your Mama, and Me. They performed that, but then they segued into the Backstreet hit Everybody. And literally, everybody jumped on their feet in just pure joy and nostalgia and just had a great time. So it was like a mini party right in the middle of the party. So that was a lot of fun. And the look on Tim McGraw's face when he saw them break out in their dance moves went viral. It was priceless.
Well, tell us some of the surprises.
Okay. Woo. A lot of surprises. Keith Urban, Blue Ain't Your Color, did not win. Keith Urban didn't win anything.
Oh, no.
Well, basically anything, because he won a little something. And I'll explain that later. But, not Record of the Year. He didn't win Record of the Year. Florida Georgia Line won that for Holy. And understandably, because that song did very well on the charts for a long time. And Song of the Year went to Thomas Rhett, Die a Happy Man. Now, I have an issue with this because last year, Thomas Rhett won for that song for Record of the Year. So this year he won Song of the Year. Last year he won Record of the Year. And I was like, they could have given it to someone else. They could have given it to Blue Ain't Your Color. So Keith Urban was robbed. And then also this is wild, too. So Entertainer of the Year went to Jason Aldean. Now, nothing against Jason Aldean, but he won that exact award at the ACMs last year. They could have given it to Keith Urban. They could have given it to Carrie Underwood. Both of them have had a phenomenal year. So I was like, what, huh? I think he was even surprised by that. And then the same happened with Female Vocalist of the Year. Miranda Lambert is incredible, and she won and made history in the process by having the most consecutive wins, 8 to be exact. Even she went up to the mic and she said, Carrie Underwood can sing me under the bus. So, you know, and when she went up, she gave Carrie Underwood a hug. Obviously, she thought Carrie would win, and so did I. So I really, even though I'm happy for Miranda, I think Carrie was robbed. Now, one of my favorite wins of the evening was Miranda Lambert for Album of the Year, Weight of These Wings. It really is a beautiful piece of work. And in the acceptance speech, she said, I just want to say thank you for letting me release my heartbreak and sharing it with me. And just in case you're wondering, Blake Shelton was nowhere to be found. He wasn't there. And finally, this is crazy. I thought this was crazy. The winner for Video of the Year was Artist of Then, Now, and Forever. Now, this is interesting. This is when, you got to keep in mind, these are the ACMs, the Academy of Country Music Awards. There are also the CMAs, which are the Country Music Association Awards. So Forever Country won for Video of the Year. Now, on one level, I felt like this is when the ACMs turned into Oprah. You get a trophy, you get a trophy, you get a trophy. Because there's like 30 artists in this video, and they all win. And Keith Urban is one of the winners in that sense. Now, these artists were primarily previous Country Music Association Award winners. It featured CMA Award winners. And the video was a celebratory component of the CMA's 50th anniversary. This is like the CMA's one at the ACMs, or you could say almost every CMA Award winner now has an ACM. You know? And it's interesting, the organizations originally had different focuses. So ACMs originally focused on West Coast artists, and CMAs focused on Nashville-based artists. So, but the focus for both has really shifted, you know, to a more national focus. And I think this is really a result of that. So that was just really wild.
Who would you say were the biggest winners?
Okay, biggest winners overall, I'm just going to say commercial country music, I think, was the overarching winner. Because if you created good country music this year, it could have been critically acclaimed, could even win a Grammy. But if you didn't get the marketing push you needed to really hit up the charts, especially high in the charts, you pretty much were left out of this celebration. So there were a lot of great artists that did great work this year that were nowhere to be acknowledged, not even as nominees or performers or presenters. So in that sense, I think the big winner was commercial country music. It was a commercial country party. And it was a good one, too.
Well, you can hear all kinds of country music, including commercially successful and or critically acclaimed, on VOA One's Country Hits, hosted by Nikki Strong. Feel free to share your thoughts about our discussion on Facebook and Twitter at VOA One The Hits. Thanks, Nikki.
You're welcome.
Hey there, Mr. Tin Man. You don't know how lucky you are.
The music of Miranda Lambert. And that is our show. Please visit our website at voanews.com. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks so much for joining us.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Russia's ongoing hostility in eastern Ukraine and occupation of Crimea is compromising the shared vision of a Europe that is whole, free, and at peace, said U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson. American and NATO support for Ukraine's sovereignty and territorial integrity remains steadfast. We do not and will not accept Russian efforts to change the borders of territory of Ukraine, said Secretary Tillerson on his recent trip to NATO headquarters. The United States, he said, thanks Germany and France for their determination to find a diplomatic solution to the ongoing crisis in eastern Ukraine under the Normandy format. We will continue to support their work to accelerate the implementation of the Minsk agreements. In the meantime, American sanctions on Russia will remain in place. The United States calls on Russia to exercise its influence over the separatists in eastern Ukraine to put a stop to the violence, end the campaign of attacks and intimidation against Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe, or OSCE, monitors, and facilitate their access to the area. Russia must understand, said Secretary Tillerson, there is no basis to move forward on the political aspects of the Minsk agreements until there is visible, verifiable, and irreversible improvement in the security situation. Moreover, he said, Crimea-related sanctions must remain in place until Russia returns control of the peninsula to Ukraine. The United States continues to urge Ukraine to redouble its efforts to implement challenging reforms, including uprooting corruption, increasing transparency in the judicial system, strengthening the banking sector, and pursuing corporate governance reform and the privatization of state-owned enterprises. Even in the face of ongoing Russian aggression, Ukraine is committed to reform and modernize its armed forces according to NATO standards by 2020. In support of this effort, the United States has committed over $600 million in security assistance over the last 3 years. Together, said Secretary Tillerson, we will stand by Ukraine as it defends its sovereign territory, strengthens its economy, and continues to implement reforms. As President Trump has said, every country has the right to chart its own future, and we must help the people of Ukraine maintain that sacred right.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. If you have a comment, please write to Editorials, VOA, Washington, D.C., 20237, USA. You may also comment and view all our current editorials at the VOA Editorials homepage, www.voanews.com/editorials.